This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. In today's times, young couples are wanting to choose their own partners. There are these young couples that are going to their parents and saying, I want to marry so-and-so because I'm in love. And these new generation parents are acceding to their children's requests because they've also, in all the years, been so used to giving their children what they want that they are forgetting to have conversations with their children. What I find happening is that such a marriage, which seems like a real fairy tale marriage because they found each other, they look so well suited, and the marriage then dissolves. There's an end to the marriage. How could there have been a problem in the first place?
You know, Shamima, that's precisely the point. And many of them are, in fact, not even in love. They are infatuated. And we're going to need to explore that on one level. On the other level, falling in love is not a reason to marry someone else. You got to know the person, you got to know his background, you got to understand what kind of values he has, what kind of character, what kind of individual he is. And we are told, you know, that when you marry someone, you marry a person, essentially ought to marry them for their faith, the belief, the character, the person that they are. And that's a point. You find that many of them, suddenly, after a few months, they say, Daddy, you know what, I don't love him anymore. In fact, I hate him. I hate him. And so what has happened? So I think it's so fundamental for us to understand the fundamental distinctions between love and infatuation. We need to clear that, and then we can focus on the conversations they ought to have.
I here want to define infatuation. Infatuation is the emotional impulse of love, untested by time or circumstance. Since infatuation can actually lead to real love, sometimes it is difficult to see the difference. And I think that where the problem is, where this young couple say that we are in love. What's the differences between the two? What's infatuation? What's love? I mean, this young couple are saying, yes, we're in love. How do we know that it is, in fact, infatuation? How can the parents then tell the difference?
You see, one of the things, and there are, we've got here about 20-odd differences, and I think what we'll do, we'll go through a few of them anyway. The one is that when a person is infatuated, they fall into it suddenly. But when it comes to love, it grows with time. With infatuation, it deepens little with time. And with love, it's always deepening.
So it's an ongoing process.
Yes. Also, this is an important thing. With infatuation, you want your intimacy now. But with a person in love, willing to wait after marriage. And a person who is infatuated, or they are up and down emotionally, the person in love is a much more consistent person.
So there's the EQ coming in.
Absolutely, absolutely. Then a person who is infatuated is really in love with love, right? But a person that is in love with a person. The person that is infatuated is often fickle, capricious, ever-changing. The person in love is faithful.
And dependable. And the kind of traits that you'd want in a person that you're wanting to continue the rest of your life with.
For example, if person X is in love with person Y, and person Y says, I do not want to continue with this relationship, person X, because he's truly in love, will say, all the best, no problem, make dua for you, inshallah, khalas. But if you are infatuated, you go mad. How could you do this to me? Because infatuation is a much more selfish thing. The other thing is this, when a person is infatuated, he says, you know, I love her so much, I can't sleep or eat, right? And you, you know, you hear the stories, right? But the person in love has a proper perspective.
Because that's now the mature attitude. You know, you're not going to eat and sleep. You're not going to be eating and sleeping for what, 50 years? So having proper perspective means that I'm falling in love. I'm getting to understand this person I'm going to be spending the rest of my life with, or, you know, the fact that we've already gone into marriage, and understanding that, yes, there are going to be these ups and downs, and it's an ongoing process. It's not just an event.
Absolutely. Now, you find, you know, when people tell you, for example, the person that is infatuated often speaks about how we broke off so many times.
Yes.
Hostile, I was so angry. I told her exactly what I felt. But the person who is in love does not panic when a problem arises, wants to discuss it, right? And the person who is infatuated often speaks, emphasize the beauty. "You, I don't think I'll ever meet a beautiful girl like that." But a person in love will speak about the character also. The person infatuated wants to get, he wants to be a recipient. But person in love wants to give. The person who is infatuated is often talking about my feelings. But the person who is in love speaks about the other's needs.
So here we're talking about being self-centered. So if it's all about yourself, you know, he's not coming to the party. He's not being emotionally involved. He doesn't want to do this and he's saying that. And he's not coming, getting involved in whatever I want happening. Already it's a warning signal that we on the infatuated side of life rather than being in love. Or, you know, then being in love would be, yes, I'm happy to do this because I know it's important to you. I'm happy to go and visit with your mom twice a week because I know how special your relationship is with your mom and how much she sacrificed for you. Am I right?
Yes. You know, just to summarize the other points, the point you make is so important that the person who is infatuated is always about me. Myself, I. It's you, you are more concerned about that. You show no sensitivity to the other individual. And it's about more about, you know, exactly what my feelings are. It's about why don't you think about my particular feelings? And as a result of that, this can be very, very problematic because a person in love shows a lot more generosity, shows more compassion, but the person infatuated is more egocentric. And you find, oh, you're not considering my feelings. Yeah, I mean, surely, what about the other person's feelings? You can, and love, both people must enjoy the same emotion. And you find, and this doesn't happen, you find that this kind of feeling, and I say that infatuation is so intense, is so it mesmerizes you. And suddenly what happens, they say, you know what, when you get married, they say it becomes an eye-opener. Suddenly you're rooted in reality. And it's difficult to sustain that infatuation because you got to come to grips with the reality around you.
Being possessive would fall under
being
which,
infatuated.
Okay. And what would the opposite to it be?
The opposite is will allow the other person to relate to others. You know what happens? You know, when you are infatuated, suddenly you find that you tell your spouse, "Please, I want you to cut off ties with all your friends. I have nothing to do with them," because of your own insecurities. And therefore, all the time, what you require when you are infatuated, you require all the time affirmation. You require molly coddling. You require a person to always say to you, "You know, I care for you. I love you. Come here," and everything else. And a person who is infatuated will always see the other person, when he's engaging with others, that all of them are in competition with her.
What about your image of the other person? You know, when your image of the other person is that, you know, he's perfect for me. The spouse is the most beautiful girl on earth, has what lovely qualities about her. And she is perfect. There's nothing more I require from that person. to my mind, that would fall under the infatuation category. Am I right?
Absolutely.
What would be then? What would be the opposite of that?
So a person who is in love realizes that you have beautiful qualities and you have also other qualities that you can develop.
So it's our strengths and weaknesses. And accepting that.
And accepting that, yes, that no one is perfect, you see.
Okay, one more I want to focus on. I keep expecting, just to be happy all the time. I need to be happy, 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 happy all the time. And it must just happen, I don't know how.
Yeah. Now you find
falls under which category?
Now that's infatuation. Now the other person who is in love knows that you're going to have issues, but you're able to deal with those issues
and work at that.
There's positivity. You find with the person who's infatuated, although it seems a nice, intense emotion, but there's a lot of negativity, because what happens? There's going to be a lot of unmet expectations.
Would you know ultimately whether it's the infatuation or it is really somebody that you are in love with?
I think if you look at what we shared, the points, if you realize if it is more about you,
right.
For example, what it does when you are infatuated, you are listening to your own inverted commas heart, but not to the heart of the other. It's more about your own ego. It's more about to massage your own ego. So what you really require, someone that massages your ego, someone that massages your egocentric nature, where it is a selfish. Infatuation is really a selfish feeling.
Right.
Selfish feeling. And where you do not recognize the other. In other words, you are more concerned about the other person meeting your expectations rather than you yourself meeting the expectation of the other and looking at what you think should be a solution to this particular problem or whatever.
Now, we're into our third CD, Idris, and the message that I'm getting is that, yes, it's really, really important to have these conversations, not 6 years after marriage, not even 6 months after marriage, not even 6 days after marriage, but before the marriage. So we're talking about here the premarital conversation. How would that benefit this future relationship?
I think the benefits for the premarital conversation is unbelievable. What would it do, right? Number one, it will help you to understand the other. It will help you to understand the background of the other. It will help you to understand the spirituality, the temperament, understand the family, help you to understand, for example, the past of the other, the childhood experience. So in other words, you have really, and also what are his aspirations for the future? What are the value systems embedded in his own life? What is it that makes him angry? What is it that makes him sad? What is it? What are his pet aversions? What are his pet hobbies? What about his social skills? So a whole range of things that you learn. And why that is important? Naturally, the conversations can go on indefinitely. And we're not saying that you've got to flout the Sharia. And it's important to have those discussions. Because my view is this, that if you are not prepared to have these conversations, for example, I give people 100 questions you need to ask each other before you marry. Maybe 10 of them might be relevant to you, maybe 15 to your partner to be. So you rather do that, go through the process so that you are making now a more informed decision, not based on infatuation, not even based on the fact that you love him, but based on the reality on the ground. That's one. The other critical aspect is this, that today, I believe, if young people go through this premarital conversation, and we're not saying only the conversation between them, also with the prospective in-laws, I believe it'd be an effective antidote. It will stem the tide of divorces in our community.
I know there are those couples that are saying, I began thinking of things that I wish my husband and I had talked about with each other before we got married. we knew each other, we got married, but we never had some conversations until the problem arose. So problem arose in this example on child rearing. And it became an issue because I realized that mine and my spouse's child rearing practices were different. So the problem arose and we had to fix it. How many fights we could have saved ourselves if we had talked about these things ahead of time? I'm talking here about child rearing. It could be related to anything.
Okay, let's finish. I mean, let's talk about child rearing, right? That's fundamental. If you look at it, there ought to be many questions to be asked about child rearing. Let's just get a case in point. How were you raised as a child? Were you a happy child? Do you like the parenting style of your parents? Whom do you love most, your father or your mother? Did they express their love for each other? Have they expressed their love for you? How did they express their love for you, right? And if you were to have children, what would you embrace of their parenting style? What would you reject? What are things that made you happy at home? What are things that really made you sad at home? So now these discussions are very, very critical because psychologists have said what you learn in the first 5 years of your life, you never, ever learn for the rest of your life. So part of the premarital conversations ought to be a significant part, I would say a significant part about your child rearing.
So this child rearing you're talking about is now you're actually already moving into the actual conversations
yes.
that the couple and their family should be having.
I mean, even, for example, part of it is now imagine this, that you never had the discussion. Even, for example, you know, many people, when you give them these questions before they marry, they said, you know, just as well you gave it to me. We never thought about it. For example, the wife might say, you know, after they marry, you know what, or in the honeymoon, by the way, I don't have any kids.
Yes.
I don't want to have any kids. Shoo. You understand what I'm saying to you?
Or the
husband says the same thing. So it's important that you discuss it, right? And also another thing, right? And you could, there are so many questions there. And you could, the other one is also critical. What about your relationship history? I know of couples, they did not talk about it. They say, sometimes in the honeymoon where the wife says, you know, she's comfortable with him. She said, darling, you know, my shusha babalina, my love, I'm so happy to be with you. He says, me too. It's a beautiful moonlight. Oh, beautiful, beautiful. He said, but something, you know, I was thinking, I didn't know how to ask you, but I'm comfortable. Tell me about your relationship history. So the man might tell her, tell me about yours first. She says, well, I'm pure. I've never, ever gone out with anyone. Although overtures have been made to me, but, you know, I come from a staunch family. So what about you? Well, he says, okay, he's comfortable. He says, no, I was a bit of a flirt, you know. I was flirtatious. I had lots of girlfriends. And then she would ask the next question, were you intimate with them? Then she says, yes, I was. Then another question might be asked, where are they now? And they are married. Where are they staying? Do I know them? Now suddenly what happens? She's probing, isn't it?
Yes.
She's probing. Now you find insecurity coming into being. Now if she wanted to marry someone who is pure, untainted, who had no relationships with anyone else, that question ought to have been asked.
Before.
Now this can trigger a whole range of things. Because now she'll be thinking when she's married, when he's being intimate with me, is he fantasizing about one of his exes? You know what I'm saying to you? So these questions have to be asked. We've got many, many questions and we are prepared to share it, if they contact us, to share it with our listeners. Continue.
What about sharing with each other their religious beliefs, their views on spirituality, their views on how to spiritually uplift their future children?
You know, it's a very important. You're asking some very powerful questions today, Shamima. I think you have eaten well, Michael. You see, the whole thing is that you might marry someone and you're a person of faith and you realize and the husband or wife says, you know what, I'm an agnostic or I'm an atheist. Finish. It's finished, right? Okay. And then you say, okay, fine, we have children. Then how are you going to bring them up? He says, I've got no issue if you're bringing them up the way you prefer to bring them up. Now, so these questions that you're asking are very important.
What about, I get to understand the spirituality and the spiritual beliefs of the spouse to be, and I say to myself, you know what, he or she is not very spiritual. I'll change that. I'll fix it. I'll slowly work on him or her, and I'll change that. Can I live with that person's belief system? Because what if I can't make that change? Because I can't live on that assumption that, no, I'm going to sort it out. And there's always this grandiose idea that I'm going to fix him or her.
You see, Shamima, that's such an important point. Now, when it comes to your belief system, it is something fundamental, one of the imperatives in our life. So you cannot be lighthearted about it and hoping that there'll be a magic wand and there'll be a complete change. So then I think it'll be very, very foolish, for example, then if you feel strongly about it and in the sense that you want to marry someone that is spiritual or someone that is moving towards spirituality, someone who may not, for example, been reading Salah before but started reading Salah, makes a commitment that he wants to be inclined that way, then it makes a big difference. So what I'm saying to you, if that issue, that's a red flag, and if that issue raises his head, then I would say to you, do not rush into the marriage. In fact, I would say do not get married.
And in any of the conversations where there's this slight worry or slight fear, we cannot go on the assumption that, don't worry, I will sort out the problem.
And in fact, Shamima, it's not something you can compromise on. You see? It's not something that is you can compromise. You're talking about fundamental beliefs. If it's something else, then perhaps this can be negotiated. You know.
What about the question of asking the spouse to be, what are your priorities? Is it work? Is it Allah? Is it me that's going to be your priority? Is it going to be our kids? Is it going to be your family or my family? What is the main focus in your life? Because that is going to give me a fair idea of where I fit in, firstly. It'll give me an idea of the person's spirituality. It'll give me an idea of where this person's headed. If he says, oh, no, I have no focus in work, that means he's got no drive in him. So what should I look for in this conversation?
You see, that's also a very critical question to ask, because in the end, when couples have a problem, when their values are not aligned, we're not saying there must be too much of the sameness, but there is some a nuance approach, something different, a subtlety, that's fine. But in the end, we must subscribe to the same core values. Now you find that even if you regard family as priority, but how much of a priority, there could be some slight differences, that is not an issue. So I think what's important in the end, we need to look at, in the end, marriage is not about living in a theoretical vortex. It's about living in the real world. It's about your engagement with these things. And I think that has to be discussed. And if, for example, you find that in none of those items that you raise, that you're completely non-aligned. And he says, well, this is what I believe in. This is what I subscribe to. These are my value systems. Then you know exactly again that marriage is not going to work.
Another important question that one should ask the partner-to-be is the traditions that they value. You know, it could be social traditions. Sometimes there's these cultural traditions that you've grown up with that your family continue to do, and the spouse-to-be might not even subscribe to it. What about certain traditions in terms of the religion? Certain traditions that the family have. Annually, there's an extended family outing that happens. Is it going to continue? You know, that discussion needs to happen. What about personal traditions? What about the tradition that I, in the weekend, every Saturday and Sunday morning, I need to do exercise? And my partner-to-be subscribes to, no, it's rest time, and, you know, we want to sleep in. Are these relevant conversations as well?
You see, Shamima, I want to just add a caveat, a precondition. What I'm saying to you, to people, you got to understand that when you marry, you're also going to be exposed to new experiences.
Right.
You cannot, for example, come there so premeditated. You say, because our family did not have this family tradition, then it's wrong. Right? Now, it's like the other family saying, because y'all do not have it, doesn't make it wrong. You understand what I'm saying to you? We don't get into that dynamic. We're not talking about compromising on the Sharia. What is important is this, that in life you find we are a diversified community, and you find that no one has a monopoly of knowledge. And when you travel, as I have done throughout the world, many parts of the world, you're able to see a lot of wisdom in many things that are happening, be it religious traditions or otherwise. And I think the idea is, but if you as an individual have made up your mind that this tradition, this cultural practice goes against your own value system and you cannot live with it. In fact, you are livid that family does that, again, it's a red flag. So what we are saying is this, that these questions have to be asked.
So these questions that we're talking about is what gives you the insight to say, yes, we are very compatible, and also helps us when the future conversations arrive once we're in marriage, and then there's the little disagreement. It's something we've already spoken about.
And therefore, Shamima, do you not realize the wisdom by talking about self-esteem, you see? If you've got low self-esteem, then you'll not be able to adapt to any environment. Everything becomes wrong. You are right. You want people to pander to you and to ensure that you get what you want and not prepared to accept something that is new.
Now, the next question I want to move on is, might be sensitive in some people's cases where, I want to talk about money. Where I'm going to ask the person, how do you handle money? Do you just spend it lavishly? Do you save money? Do you have any bad habits with money? Do you, spend on certain things I should know about? Do you spend when you're feeling emotional? I know a lot of people say, when I'm upset, I just go in on a shopping spree. Are you responsible? What is your history with money? Would the other person take offense to that kind of question and say, it's none of your business?
You see, Shamima, it's so important that when you raise the issue, you say to the person, that you and I, if we get married, we want to be very happily married, right? But I think let us be open and ask us ourselves some questions. Whatever questions you're free to ask me, and I'm prepared to respond. In that way, we make an informed decision. It's about the way you can. It's not like this. You say to the person, okay, marry me. I have 100 questions you have to ask immediately. Otherwise, it'll be in the presence of my father, my grandfather, and my neighbors. So now that's different, right? It's about how you ask in an engaging way.
Okay, but this question about money?
Money is important. Money is one of the chief causes of problems in a marriage. You might have a husband who is impulsive, a person likes embellishment, leads a, ornate. He likes to spend on cars and everything else. And then there is, for example, a history that he has gone bankrupt a number of times. His father had to help him out. And also the whole issue of money. The wife says, I'm working, you're working. How are we going to use this?
Right.
Very importantly. And although from Islamic perspective, the man has a responsibility about clothing, feeding, and, accommodating the, So what can happen, for example, there'd be a discussion. The wife might say, wife-to-be says, both of us are working. We're professional people. We are moving to our own home. Right, that's what we decided, for example. So we will help each other to do that. You know what I'm saying to you? So it's about all of those things have to be discussed,
Okay, the next question that I have here where the couple could ask each other, what are their expectations of marital roles? That means what is it that they want from each other? Who is responsible for what in the home? Who is responsible for the cleaning? Who is responsible for the cooking? Who do you think will be fulfilling certain relationship roles in the marriage? That means what is, clearly defining what is your role, what is my role?
You know, that perhaps should have been the first question.
Right.
You know what I'm saying to you? Because it's about expectations. Now, for example, a girl might have been brought up in a very affluent home where she had three or four servants. They have someone that's cooking. They have an au pair and everyone else. They do nothing, right? And we don't begrudge them. That's the way. But she's marrying someone else someone who perhaps may not have that luxury.
Right.
Right. And then they have a discussion about respective roles. I mean, she says, you know what, in my home, I was treated like a princess, like a queen. So you're going to treat me the same way. So what do you mean? He said, well, I'm not going to do any cooking. If you cannot afford servants, then I'm sad. You got to do it. You know what I'm saying to you? Now, if there is, for example, that approach, then it can be problematic, as opposed to, whilst, you know, I have not done these things, but I would like to do it. In fact, I've been asking, I'm going for cookery lessons, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. So there's a difference. You know what I mean? Approach showing a greater degree of maturity. And therefore, you know, one of the things that I tell people that whilst, you know, the critical aspect is choosing someone for his belief, his faith and strength of faith, you also, this is a personal view. I don't know whether you subscribe to it. Always try to marry someone who belongs to a similar social circle. So there isn't a sense of inadequacy. So you, for example, now this person who enjoyed maybe traveling throughout the world every year, you know, going here, there, everywhere else, and this person here, this man who's married, I mean, at best he went to Zurich, you know, or he went to, in Durban, he went to Bahraini for the weekend, and he's so excited. Imagine he gets married, right? He gets married. And he gets married, then he tells her, darling, you know, I'm going to surprise you this weekend. She's so excited. She said, where are we going? We're going to Bahraini. you know, she'll go. You know what I'm saying to you?
No, but that can be the start of major problems because now make him feel inadequate. You're not able to provide for me in the manner that I was accustomed to.
Mm. So these are real things we're talking about, you know, creating lots of problems, right?
How about this question, asking the person, what are your non-negotiables in marriage? What is unacceptable in a marriage, no matter what? What do you see as really unforgivable, as an offense that you won't tolerate?
I think, you know, Shamima, every question you're asking is critical. You got to know. Someone might say this. If you show disrespect to my mother, my marriage is over. You know, and because that's it. If you show disrespect. Or if you show me disrespect in public, you know, I tell my wife in public you praise me. At home you can chastise me, you know. And it reminds me of someone once said, you know, one day I had my wife on her knees. He said, come on. You had your wife on her knees? You liar. He said, yes. How come? He said, no, I was hiding under the table. So I had my wife on her knees. So that these are important questions. So each person may have a different set of non-negotiables.
Yeah, so that you know that exactly to him the family is most important or respect is most important in his life. But it's keeping that conversation open.
Yeah. But in fact, I'll ask a further question. When if I were to say showing me disrespect, is what do you mean? I like to know, what do you mean exactly? You know.
But then also, you know, earlier you said it's the way in which you ask the question. You know that now here you said, oh, if you show disrespect to my mother, then the marriage is over. Mm. Already, the person's back is up.
Yeah, correct. Yes.
That whole scenario could be said a little different. You know, to me, family is the most important thing on earth.
Mm.
You are absolutely special to me. I will make sure I will try my utmost not to disrespect you.
Mm.
So in return, I need the following from you because I will make sure I am going to take your parents as my family and I'm not going to show them any disrespect.
That's good. You see, you are with a lot more hikmah and wisdom. And when the person realizes, you know, you're also going to respect me and give me dignity Why should I show disrespect to his mummy?
One final question that you think is of paramount importance. I have a whole host here, but one all-encompassing one that you feel a marriage cannot take place if this conversation didn't happen.
You know what? There are many that come to mind. I would want to know the person's temperament.
Right.
The temperament. And if the person says, you know what, I have a short fuse and I get upset very quickly, then you ask the question, when you get upset, how does your anger manifest?
What do you do?
What do you do? He says, sometimes I can get violent. So now that's frightening. But if he says that I'm now able to manage my anger because I've gone for therapy, that's a good sign. That's a very, very good sign. And so therefore, it's important to find out about the person's temperament. I mean, for example, we can also look at addictions. You know, what kind of addictions? You know, it may be a recovering addict. So there are many, many questions, inshallah. We'll continue with it, right? And we'll talk about it, some of the other questions. But what we are saying, it is really an indication to the listeners that you cannot go into a marriage blindly. You got to know the person as best as you can, to engage him, ask the right kind of questions, look at questions that will be critical in ensuring harmony in your home.
In the CD3, we've spoken about love and infatuation and the difference between the two, the benefits of premarital conversations, and then we went on to discuss the actual conversations between the couple before the marriage, hence us talking about the premarital conversations.